I've always enjoyed reading. I remember I used to get so excited to check out a book from the library. There was something special about getting to make that kind of a choice. It seemed like such a grown-up thing. My dad always had a book by his chair, right next to this giant ashtray filled with cigarettes. It was almost always a Western, usually by Louis L'Amour, but no Westerns for me. I loved reading about mythology. There was a book about Hephaestus and the other Greek gods and goddesses that was my absolute favorite. I probably checked that book out of the library 4 or 5 times over the years. Thinking about that book brings back such vivid memories. It's like a portal to a time in my life where, to be honest, I don't remember much. But when I focus on those memories of reading, I can picture comic books laid out across my bedroom floor. I can see the inside of the bookmobile that used to park by the grocery store where we would shop. I remember the James Blish Star Trek novels that were down on the bottom shelves on the driver's side of this converted bus, and I'd sit cross-legged on the floor, just trying to find one that I hadn't read. Consider for a moment what you remember about reading when you were a kid. Close your eyes, let your mind wander a bit as you think about the books that were around your house growing up. The astronomer Carl Sagan once wrote that books break the shackles of time. Where do your memories of reading and books take you? You're listening to Dubious Scrapbooks, a show about how we think and how we manage the accumulation of our personal experience. I'm Jeff Myers. When I started thinking about memories of books and reading, I knew that I wanted to have a discussion with my friend Tom Nixon. Tom is the former library service manager for Fresno Unified School District, where he oversaw 110 library staff and 90 libraries. He now works as a freelance library and book access consultant. Welcome, Tom Nixon. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. Greatly appreciated.
So today we're talking about the importance of books. Obviously, I would certainly consider you an expert on not just books, but the impact of books and reading. If you think back to when you were in elementary school, so did you grow up in Fresno? I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
I did not grow up in Fresno. I was born in Torrance, California. It's in LA County. Moved a bunch of times between birth and first grade, and eventually ended up in a place called Covina, California, actually on a county island called Charter Oak.
So did moving a lot, that kind of impact, well, I guess if you moved a lot at that age, I don't know that it would impact the number of books you had.
Finish that question, because I think that's a good question.
Yeah, well, okay. So, you know, just now that you mentioned that, you know, we tend to accumulate books, right? Mm. And so I think I only moved when I was in elementary school. We only moved once. And so there was a, you know, a good amount of time between, I think all of the time that I was in, you know, elementary school, we were in the same place, same house. So there was an accumulation of books. You know, if I think back, I can think of the books that were, you know, in my house. You know, if I kind of mentally put myself there and then kind of walk around, you know, I see certain books. I see, for whatever reason, there was always a Guinness Book of World Records. I don't know why. And then we had some encyclopedias, which, boy, I don't even.
Everybody had those encyclopedias back in the day.
Yeah, you know, and I actually enjoyed reading those. I think that was an interesting kind of discovery right. for books. And then, you know, and then my own books that I would get from, you know, Scholastic that I would own. But other than that, everything was, for the most part, from our library. So what did that look like in your house growing up?
So the Tom Nixon version. So parents divorced when I was really quite young. I'm glad you're going to cut that out. when I was really quite young, I was not read too much as a child. I was a late reader. Grew up in working class neighborhood after working class neighborhood a little bit. So I remember a number of houses, apartments, probably before the age of six. But it stabilized pretty quick after that. And so I actually went to the same school for first, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. And second grade, I lived with my other parent. But and so that stabilized it quite a bit. But what happens when you move that much is you, like we see in schools now, is you develop slow readers. I did eventually start to catch up in second grade and wanted to read anything and everything that was possibly available. In those days, well, and these days, reading could be rather competitive in school. You know, in those days it was the stars on the chart kind of thing, and I wanted to be the best at that. For whatever reason, I don't even remember why. Probably because it was the area that I stood out in and I didn't necessarily stand out in other areas. Something. But that was a newness for me, because I remember struggling in kindergarten and first grade because I didn't have those skills, and then somehow developing them. As I said, I was not read too much, and we know about the benefits of being read to for certain. I don't recall in the early days that there were a lot of books in the home. We eventually fixed that, but not so much in the early days.
That's interesting. Is there a book that, you know, you said that wasn't something that you connected with early on,
mm-hmm.
but is there a particular point that you do remember connecting to reading? And was it just a time period, or was there a book or a book series or something that maybe you connected with?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I'm enough older than you that the book series that I learned to read from would be probably different than you. And ours were those, let's just say, not necessarily great literature. You know, Dick and Jane went to the store, and, you know,
far as the readers that I had in elementary school, yeah, that we had the same.
And that was fine. I was fortunate, really, by second grade. I had a male teacher in second grade, Mr. Schmidt, which was very, trust me, very unusual in those days. The school I was in second grade was in Los Angeles Unified, which is huge. But he was probably one of the very few. I would not be surprised. And he had an amazing number of books in the classroom. And so I think that played a role in there. And somehow, I don't remember why or how, but we had early birds and late birds. Did you have early birds and night birds? Early birds, we actually, kids who needed more support with reading came early and then left a little early in the day. And kids that were in the advanced group, which at that school was a tiny group, they stayed late. And as it turned out, by second grade, I was a late bird, which is my one claim to fame. And that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much. I was a late bird.
That, you know, I've never heard of that. That's very interesting.
Well, you know, it actually, nobody was doing reading groups in the same way back then, where you would try to do five groups of kids in 2 hours kind of thing. And they were doing other sorts of literacy centers. It was, we're going to work on reading. And so you're either in one group or the other. Well, I don't know how many kids were in that class, because that didn't have a meaning for me then. But the larger group were the early birds. I remember that. And then in third grade, kind of the same, I had a teacher. We moved back to that other school, the K-8 school, and classroom with a lot of books. And so I think those two classrooms really did it for me, because I think for me, learning to read was very isolationist. I'm sure that there were good teachers in there doing their job. I think I learned to read because I read a lot. I mean, it was my jam, if you will.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I just didn't, because of the situation in which I grew up, I did spend a lot of time, you know, by myself. And so, you know, I really spent almost all of that time, you know, reading, whether it was, you know, comic books or just whatever I could get from, you know, the school library, or if I was lucky, we didn't have a local library that was close to my house, but we did have a bookmobile that was like a bus, a school bus or something, that had been gutted out and made into kind of this mobile library that would go and park in the grocery store that was, you know, the closest grocery store to our house. And then so a lot of my books, you know, I was able to get from there.
Can I give a shout out now? Because I know they're,
absolutely.
I get this question all the time. You mentioned comic books. I was also a big, big comic book reader. And, you know, the version now is, of course, they're still comic books, but they're also graphic novels, and everybody, so many parents want to know, well, it has pictures. Yes, it has pictures. Leave them alone. They're reading. There is huge value, particularly in, and I believe that's one of the things that helped me become a better reader, is comic books and graphic novels include pictures. That's a real thing. But the storyline is much more advanced than you would think for these sorts of things, particularly the kinds of comic books that I tended to read, but also the graphic novels you read now. That is so good for kids, particularly if you are a slower to learn reader. So good for kids.
I agree. I think, you know, it's high interest, right?
Right.
Typically it's high interest, and there are visual cues, right?
Exactly.
You can look at the page and then observe, you know, the relationships of the characters to each other, the, you know, locations. And so it's kind of like context clues, as far as giving, you know, helping you with new vocabulary, right? That, you know, it just adds another layer of, it's a visual context clue. And so, yeah, I absolutely agree. There's no way that I would have been as successful of a reader. And, you know, I'm still a, you know, I'm a lifelong reader. I'm always reading. So,
me too. You know, it's funny. I, because you're going to ask me about libraries, and I also grew up in a place that didn't have a library that was close by. I was sort of in between two libraries, but not particularly close to either. But we had a 7-Eleven. Oh. And the 7-Eleven had comic books in those days. And they were cheap enough that I could buy comic books. And I think that was my, I'm a lifelong reader too. The number of books I read per year is significant. And I think that's really, when I try to tie it to something, it's that. It's the fact that I was close to a place where I could get comic books. I used the school library quite a lot, but those were my two locations for sure.
You know, I'm going to, we discussed a little bit beforehand about some potential questions and kind of the order of things. And I'm going to jump the order because I want to go back to what you mentioned about that 7-Eleven, because in my head, I imagine what that looked like. And that was one of the tall spinning wire racks of comics, right?
Oh, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So I want to talk a little bit about that because I have some concerns about how my choices of books is influenced at this time, and how it's, you know, how, so previously, like, let's say you go into 7-Eleven and you spin that wire rack and you look for, maybe you look for characters that you were familiar with, or maybe you look for a cover that was interesting or dynamic or something like that. But so that was kind of your choice, right? That you were able to look and then make a choice. When you go into a library, right? You have that experience of like walking around, and maybe you have an idea of like something that you're interested in, and you can go to a particular section or something like that. But in terms of fiction, well, you're really just kind of wandering around and looking for something that grabs you, right? And so that selection is curated by the availability of the books there, and it's kind of curated by the librarian and the library staff. But now, I would say certainly in the last, 15 years, it seems like the books that I am exposed to potentially read is very influenced by commerce. And, maybe it's my purchase history on Amazon and, I go on to, I bought a book on pirates, or I bought a book on, the history of the periodic table or something like that, which both are true. So then I start getting these recommendations.
You bought a book on the history of the periodic
table. Oh my gosh. It's called The Disappearing Spoon. It was a fascinating book about the history of the periodic table. Anyway.
The nerd is strong with you. So very strong.
Yeah.
So, no denial, but yeah.
So, but I feel like I don't like that. I mean, I don't like the fact that there's some algorithm out there that's necessarily putting these books in front of me, might also be interested in this. I don't think I want that. I don't want an algorithm curating. Go ahead.
Oh, if it feels like you're being manipulated, you are. It's good to call that out. Amazon, Facebook, all of these kind of things, absolutely, whether it's commerce, because it's all commerce. You can say, oh, well, that's social media. Social media is commerce, big, big money commerce. So that's most definitely happening for sure. You've always had someone vetting much of that, regardless of where it was. That 7-Eleven, someone in Southland Corporation, I think that's 7-Eleven, is sitting there going, okay, so what are they, what comic books are they reading? And they're going to send you more of those. Why? Because that's what sells. You know, you think it's just a box of things, but if Superman and Batman are what are selling, that's what that store gets, kind of thing. There's not someone in the back room of the 7-Eleven trying to figure out which ones to get, if you will, at least back in the day. Hard to get around that. You know, I always say, because I do get asked this, is how do you get away from that? I'm not sure you can. I think, though, what you can do is find yourself a variety of places to engage from in person. It is, you know, it is Amazon, absolutely. If you buy a book on the history of the periodic table, Amazon, the next six books they recommend to you are going to be something related to that. That's a thing, which is fine which is okay, I suppose, if that tiny niche is where you want to live your reading life. But I recommend get yourself into bookstores, browse the shelves. The challenge with bookstores is, you know, that's vetted too. You want yourself something from a small publisher, probably not going to be at Barnes & Noble. I mean, that's sort of a reality. We have many, many fewer options with regards to bookstores. In the city that I live in, we really have two bookstores. One's a children's bookstore and one's a chain bookstore. I strongly support both of them. I tell, until recently, I supervised a whole bunch of librarians, and I encouraged them to buy from both of those bookstores, even the chain, because guess what? Yeah, it's a chain store, but for us, that's our local bookstore. You got to go with what you got. Get into libraries. Fresno has some really good libraries, public libraries, for sure, but limited to a certain extent. But they have been actually putting money into libraries recently. They just did a big upgrade of one of their regional libraries, and they continue to do that. But it gives you a little more the opportunity. The other thing that you get from libraries, and with some bookstores, if they have some longer-term employees, is you get recommendations. Now, Amazon is going to recommend things to you, but they're going to recommend things to you based on your buying history. A good librarian, a good bookstore employee is going to say, tell me some of the things you're interested in, particularly if you're younger. Tell me some of the things you're interested in. And then we're going to go for a walk and find some of those things. But also, a good librarian, a good bookstore person can say, you know, we don't have that book you're looking for, or we don't have books on that topic, but let's go see what we could order.
Mm.
And that, you know, that is so very different. Amazon, and not just Amazon, you know, BarnesandNoble.com, BN.com, a lot of those. It's that same thing. You know, they're working off of metrics as opposed to working off of a conversation.
Right. You know, it's interesting. You the recommendation, I think, just maybe the last, in this last, let's say the last year, I think three of the books I've read have been books that our friend, that Rick, that he'll say, hey, I read this book. You should read it because you'll enjoy it. And then he just, you know, I'll borrow the book from him, right? So it's just a personal recommendation. And I've enjoyed everything that, you know, the book I'm reading right now.
Recommendations are huge.
Yeah. And I think that the other, you know, the other place that I have found some very interesting things that I do enjoy is Goodreads.
Mm.
Because once you connect with friends, right, on Goodreads, and then you kind of see like what they're reading or what they are interested in. And I don't know where they've found some things, but I've found some really interesting, books where I'll see it'll come up in someone's feed and I'll say, oh, I'm going to add that to my list, that I want to read. And, a lot of times I do.
I find value in keeping track of what I read on Goodreads. I go through times when I'm better at that and times when I'm less good at that, for sure. Sure. The advantage, though, is I've connected with some people there. I used to be a little more precious about that. Well, I don't know you. How do I know what books you were like? And now just you want to, sure. We want to be friends on Goodreads, knock yourself out. Because I'm very curious what other people are reading, both professionally and personally, because you get a sense of what a person's like, even people that you don't know, you get a sense of what they're like by what they read.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I have some friends that read only science fiction, really, truly nothing else but science fiction. And I read more than my fair share of science fiction, for sure. But a lot of other things as well. But I get a sense, if I'm looking for graphic novels, for example, I know my friend Sarah Smith, who is a librarian in Sanger, California. I know that she is the queen of all things graphic novels. And and so she reads an amazing number of them. And if I'm looking for something like that, I'm going to go look to see what she's reading these days, because she reads hundreds a year of graphic novels. She has a website. She has all these kind of things. But I know that I'm looking for other kinds of things. What's popular? Because that's a question I get a lot, is what's popular? What are kids reading now? Well, I can't possibly read everything that they read. There's not enough time in the day. But I can go look at something like Goodreads, and not surprisingly, my friends are readers too. And so being able to look at what they're reading gives me a sense, because librarians will read stuff for themselves, but they also read books specifically to keep up with what teenagers, young kids, whomever you serve, also are reading.
I just looked up on my phone. I just wanted to make sure, because I kind of suspected it, but Goodreads is a subsidiary of Amazon. So, I mean, there's some evil there.
Yeah.
But I think there's some good there.
Right.
Especially being able to connect and have those kind of recommendations. Because I think even going back to, going back to our discussion about growing up and in elementary school, I would talk to, my friends about books that we were reading. And maybe there wasn't a huge selection, but, you might talk to somebody and they'd say, hey, this particular Hardy Boy mystery is a good one. We had so many of those in our school library and classrooms. I'm still fascinated by this kind of memory of books. And when a book becomes maybe more than the book itself. Like if I reflect back on reading in elementary school, there are a couple books that, were impactful to me somehow. And I'm not even sure why. There's there was a book that I know I checked it out from the Beale branch. I grew up in Bakersfield. So this was the main branch of the library system in Bakersfield. And I checked out this book on Greek mythology. And it was in the children's section. It had these very dynamic kind of line drawings. I've never been able to find this book, by the way, and I have looked for it. The primary story, I think, that it kind of flowed, centered around was Hephaestus and I remember the little lame god is how it was, like the title of it. And I've tried to find this thing and I've used that to search and I've even found, you know, that phrase and I've never been able to find that book. But, you know, I probably checked that out like four or five times and I'm not really sure why that was so impactful. But it's just a book I remember. And then I remember another book I think I probably read in maybe fifth grade. And I know that I checked it out from our school library. And it was about a secret agent but it was kind of science fiction. And I just thought it was cool. I remember he would take this pill and then his face would kind of change like putty-like. And then he would make his face look like somebody else for a little while. I have no idea what that book was, right? Why do I remember that book? I read a ton of books, you know? Why is that one special?
Are there any books that stay with you?
Yeah. That stay with you that like in your head you think of like a book growing up and like that's a book that springs to mind?
You know, I have a few books from my childhood. For whatever reason, you know, and I'm like you, I read so many books. You know, some of the ones that stay with you. I started to make a list last night, a short list in anticipation of this, and then I realized got five books on the list, or books and or series. Four of them, I want to say, they were read-alouds, teacher read-alouds. And I had not made that connection, and it was an interesting connection for me. Wow. I can remember the teachers doing this. The Mouse and the Motorcycle by Beverly Cleary.
I love that.
I want to say that was fourth grade. I had a teacher who read to us every day, which is what all teachers should be able to do. And that's the thing that, and then I read everything Beverly Cleary had written up to that point kind of thing, because I went, I like this. This is good stuff. Island of the Blue Dolphins. Scott O'Dell. Oof. That was another one that was a read aloud from back in the day. And all those other books, because trust me, I remember the period in my life when these happened, and it was, always wonder what to share, what not to share. It's a good thing. I would say it was a time where I spent my life reading more than anything else, to the detriment of probably math, science, history, I would imagine, because I would sneakily read in class. Yes, this was a thing. Johnny Tremaine by Esther Forbes, which is a book, I think, from the 50s, and yet won an award back then, but also a read-aloud for me. As I got older, I got more into science fiction. Part of that was because it's what was available. I had an older brother who was very much a reader, and he had all the books, so I would borrow those books from him, and, you know, the Starship Troopers, all these kinds of things. And the one other one, our school ran a contest, and so they would put these mysteries up on the wall outside the office. If you can figure out the answer, you win a prize kind of thing. And I read the first one, and it came out straight out of a book, and it was part of the Encyclopedia Brown series of books. Donald J. Sobel, I think. But it's interesting that there are read-alouds or events that, or life experiences that remind me of these books, given, you know, in those days I was reading every day. And so it must have been thousands of books in my childhood or something.
You know, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. And then just as educators, you know, the books that we would read aloud to our students back in the day. That was very impactful. And I'm pretty sure that Who wrote the one about the little cricket in New York?
I'm sorry, say that again?
There was a story about a cricket who lived in New York or something. And
that's an old one.
Yeah. I remember that was a read aloud and I enjoyed that one. There was that period of time and, you know, other things like from the mix-up files of Miss Baisley Frankweiler and all of those books. If you look at your list, those are all kind of dynamic characters. Those are very adventurous characters, Tom Nixon.
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah. I was a boy, that was for sure. And nothing against girls, because girls read these too. But, you know, when you look at this, the ones that stuck with me. Oh, the cricket one, the cricket in Times Square.
Yes.
But, oh, no, for sure. They're all adventures. You know, it's interesting how Island of the Blue Dolphins and the protagonist is a young lady left alone by herself. And so I make those connections, you know. It's when you look, Johnny Tremaine has people in it, but it's really a book about Johnny Tremaine for sure. Mm-hmm. Even the mouse and the motorcycle, you know, I mean, these kinds of things. Stories about people overcoming.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are there any books that you revisit that you've kind of come back to or revisited in your over your lifetime?
There are periodically. As an adult, I've gone back and read some of the Robert Heinlein books for sure. They have certainly, for me, stood the test of time, I expect, because it transports me to another place, another time kind of thing.
And it transports you to a personal space, which I think is interesting, because I absolutely know what you're talking about. And I've read, I also loved all of those Heinlein novels.
I have read the Harry Potter series. I can tell you what that takes me back to. The first, I had just started teaching for Fresno Unified and taught sixth grade. And the read aloud that we did, which was kind of a long read aloud, was the first Harry Potter book. Mm. So I have a connection to that with that group of students. And I'm still connected to some of those students all those years later. But my son became very fascinated with really two sets of books. One was the Harry Potter books. And so we went to, he read all the books. He was in third grade and was reading these books. And they got big fast, not necessarily the first one, but there were a lot of pages at some point. And then we'd go to all the movies. The other thing he liked was, do you remember the Animorphs series of books?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He loved those too. He had a big collection of them. You know, you always think you're going to raise readers, and all of my kids are readers. It just depends on what you want to classify as reading, I suppose. My son is the book reader, but my two daughters will read all sorts of things. And I wanted to share a little bit on this topic is, I have a family member who, kind of far removed family member, but a family member nonetheless, who went through some not good things as a child, some fairly horrific things. And with her therapist, part of what they did was, they had her go back and read some of these books from her childhood because it was making connections for her. Black Beauty, My Friend Flicka, those kind of way back in the day books that are older than me. Because it got her head in a space where they needed to be a little bit. What's it like to be a kid? What do you remember from your childhood?
That's fascinating. So I do know that, you know, sometimes when you have a difficult childhood, You know, you'll forget a lot of those things. You just kind of put that time period out of your head,
right?
Because it is a survival,
self-defense tactic.
And, you know, there are strategies that they use to connect you back with them, but that's one I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It's super interesting. That is super interesting. Wow. I wish I knew
because all of a sudden I will decide, hey, I'm going to reread these books. I don't necessarily connect that to something, but you know, if there was a little hindsight there, you almost wonder, well, why am I doing this now? As opposed to, because there's always something else new to read. But I'm really going to go back and read all the Harry Potter books. That's a lot of reading. That's a lot of pages, but hard to know.
Yeah. So you recently, and I mean really recently, have retired from quite an illustrious career in education. So what's next for Tom Nixon?
What's next for Tom Nixon? He's you know, it's funny. I'm going to appreciate using this podcast that I'm going to point people to on social media. Library and literacy consulting, some. But I have three children, two grandchildren, who I would like to spend more time with. So there's always that. So some consulting around books, around access to books. I think, in particular, working with places to break down the barriers that artificial barriers that we often put up about kids and access to books, access to libraries.
I know you wouldn't mention it on your own, but I think you should bring it up because you talk about access to books. And I think that you mentioned something to me about a partnership that you built with Scholastic and getting books into kids' homes for Fresno Unified, which is either the third or fourth largest school district in the state of California. I can't remember.
Depending on which week it is.
Depending on what week. But you got a lot of books into kids' homes.
As it happens, when Jeff said that I had recently retired, yes, this was 2 days ago, was my last day. And on my last day, we did the fifth in a series of book giveaways. This comes out of Fresno Unified's Library Services, where I was the manager for a number of years. But this was a dream for me because we have many, many kids who do not have books in the home. But we didn't know how we were going to fund it. And a little bit, COVID helped us out. We would have probably never got there if we hadn't gotten some of the COVID funds and were able to do that. And so as of this last event, we have pushed into our homes. If you don't have a sense of Fresno, high level of poverty throughout much of the city. So we pushed in 845,000 books at this point. And we have another one of these events scheduled for November. Probably will hit 1 million then. I'm hoping that we continue to do this. We have a great deal of support from the superintendent, Bob Nelson. We have a great deal of support from our board members because they all see the value of books in the home. But it's, for a lot of our homes, it is, even for the parents who know the importance of books and reading, you're making a choice there. Feeding kids, buying books, that really is a choice. And certainly our kids can check out books out of the school library, but that's never enough. And books in the home has shown to be time and again, is sort of the secret sauce, if you will, of kids becoming more literate.
Well, that's a really fabulous feather in your cap, I gotta say.
Thank you.
I think I've taken enough of your retired time. And I just want to thank you again for being on the podcast. Congratulations on your retirement and good luck in all your future endeavors.
Thanks, Jeff. Great opportunity to be here. Appreciate you, my friend.
I want to again thank my guest, Tom Nixon, for taking some time to talk about his memories of reading and books. If you want to contact him, you can email tom.nixon@bookfloodmedia.com, or you can find him on Twitter @bookfloodmedia. After recording the interview with Tom, I visited a couple of bookstores and just wandered around, allowing myself the opportunity to discover something new. If there is a bookstore in your area, consider supporting it. If you haven't been to your local public library lately, maybe you should check it out. If we don't support them and utilize their services, they're not going to be around for much longer. If you would like to share a memory of your favorite books, or you can leave a comment on the show's website. Just go to dubiouspod.show and look for this episode. You can also contact me directly. Just send an email to host@dubiouspod.show. If you want to get updates about this podcast, follow me on social media, and I'll include links for all of this in the show notes. Thank you for listening to this episode of Dubious Scrapbooks. If you found value in this episode, then consider sharing it with a friend. The best way to show your support for this podcast is to leave a rating everywhere you listen to podcasts, because it helps new listeners find the show.